This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
Businessmen and gloomy scientists have predicted our fossil-powered lives mean carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere could reach 1,000 parts per million or more. What would such a world look like? We can get a glimpse by going way back, hundreds of millions of years, to a troubled hothouse world. Our tour guide will be Dr. Jessica Whiteside, a lecturer in ocean and earth science at the University of Southampton in the UK. She's the lead author of a new study that's been getting a lot of press. The title is Extreme Ecosystem Instability, Suppressed Tropical Dinosaur Dominance for 30 Million Years. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Dr. Whiteside, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. I'm glad to be here.
Well, before we get to the dinosaurs, always a topic of interest, let's set the stage a little. What is the time period your group studied?
So we were focused on the late Triassic. This was 230 to 200 million years ago. And we set out to establish the environmental climatic conditions for the dawn of the age of the rise of dinosaurs.
And even though you worked with fossils in the American Southwest, in the ancient Earth, there wasn't a North America. What did that landmass look like then?
Well, the late Triassic witnessed one of the end members in Earth's geography. That is, that all of the continents were united into the supercontinent Pangaea, and there was essentially one global ocean in existence at the time. The rocks that we looked at were in the western part of Pangaea in what is now New Mexico.
So things just sort of floated around, and that's where the fossils ended up. Is that what we're saying?
No, the rocks were deposited in the land that is now New Mexico. But at the time of the late Triassic, when these specimens were living, or these actual dinosaurs and their competitors were living in the late Triassic, New Mexico, which is now at about 36 degrees north latitude, was close to the equator at about 12 degrees latitude. So in the late Triassic, we had the supercontinent Pangaea, and then it broke up and at the Triassic-Jurassic boundary, opening the Atlantic Ocean, and then Pangaea continued to move north, hence the discrepancy in latitudes between then and what it is today.
Okay, so how high were carbon dioxide levels in the time you studied?
In the time we studied, atmospheric CO2 was 4 to 6 times that of modern levels. So that is about 1,200 to 1,600 parts per million compared to today's just a little over 400 parts per million.
And there seems to be a fairly high allowance for air in the carbon dioxide figures published in this paper. Why is that?
Yes, there is some allowance for air based on reconstructions of the soil and the conditions that the soil was deposited in. That's how we construct these carbon dioxide values. And so there is some uncertainty that we report. But all in all, the values were much higher than today, you know, at least two, three times modern conditions, but within the realm of what's forecasted for 100 to 200 years in our future.
Well, we'll get to that. That's some sort of scary information. Now, one of the questions driving this paper concerns the lack of fossil remains of big dinosaurs in the tropics. Please tell us about that.
Yes, this has been one of the unsolved mysteries in the rise of dinosaurs. The big question being, why are large herbivorous dinosaurs, these long-necked sauropodomorphs, the predecessors of things like Brachiosaurus or Brontosaurus, conspicuously absent from the tropics, where only a few species of meat-eating dinosaurs were able to gain a foothold, and that this condition persists for 30 million years after the origin of dinosaurs.
So your paper talks about extreme ecosystem instability. Could you give us some examples of that?
Yes. So what we discovered was that there were wild swings in climate and a lack of consistent abundant vegetation that suppresses the plant-eating dinosaurs in these tropical regions. And what we saw was that there was a fluctuating environment where you had extreme seasonal shifts that prevents vegetation from growing and sustaining or surviving. This prevents the consistent abundance and development of plant life for the dinosaurs to feed on. It's a regime where you have alternating really, really wet seasons to really dry seasons, drought that's characterized by elevated wildfires that then kill more plants and result in a lot of erosion. So it was a really harsh time in the late Triassic here, where you have these monsoonal conditions that go very wet to really dry, changing the landscape of the plants, and with these wildfires burning up to 600 degrees Celsius.
Yes, I noticed with special interest the reference to very hot fires that burned in the ancient tropical world. A Canadian fire expert on Radio EcoShock told us about fires happening now that are so hot they sterilize the soil. What drives such fires, and what happens to the landscape after them?
In this case, it's thought that these fires punctuate the environmental conditions by really, really dry conditions, where you have these extremes with precipitation to essentially all evaporation, and then you have the plants dying off that are fueling even hotter fires, which in turn kill more plants, damage the soils, and then increase erosion. And the temperature of the wildfire burning is given by the analysis of charcoal data that's in these same deposits.
And your paper also reminded me of a map of doom that scientist James Lovelock showed the Royal Society a few years ago. It predicted a future world where deserts went right around the Earth from the tropics right up into the subtropics, like a big dead zone. How does that compare to what you found in the time you looked at?
This would have been a landscape very similar to the contemporary Western U.S., which is an arid realm. So I would say that's quite consistent with what we envision this late Triassic tropics to look like in the western part of Pangaea.
Do we know why the ancient climate in the tropics was so unstable?
This, in part, is potentially related to the configuration of the continents, that you had the supercontinent, and that we're looking at sites in the interior part of the continent. So it's experiencing a continentality response to the climate, so it's more sensitive than other areas. And since these are terrestrial settings, they're not buffered by the ocean in terms of pulling in the CO2. So it's much more intense in the middle part of the continent, afforded by the in member and geography by elevated CO2 conditions to begin with.
Now, Jessica Whiteside, a skeptical listener will question how you can possibly know what the climate was like hundreds of millions of years ago. How was the science done?
These measurements were done similar to the way that one might reconstruct contemporary environmental change from several regions. We looked at several different methods. We analyzed stable carbon isotopes from fossilized organic matter in the rocks. We also looked at carbon isotopes from carbonate nodules in fossilized soil horizons. That gave us the reconstruction of carbon dioxide values. We looked at fossil pollen and spores to understand the change in vegetation from those plants that are characteristic of arid regimes to more humid regimes. We analyzed fossil charcoal, and then, of course, we looked at the fossilized body fossils of vertebrate animals, including dinosaurs and their contemporaries.
To read this new study, I had to look up a new word for me, palynomorphs. What are palynomorphs?
Palynomorphs are essentially pollen and spores. They're body fossil remains of plants. They're microscopic. That was a contribution from our colleague Sophie Lindstrom from Denmark.
Okay, now this is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Jessica Whiteside from the National Oceanography Center at the University of Southampton in Britain. We're talking about an ancient world of high carbon dioxide and why that might ban big dinosaurs from the tropics. Well, let's look at the dinosaurs. Jessica, you've hinted at it, but why couldn't they live in the tropics over that 30 million year long period?
They weren't able to live in the tropics essentially because there wasn't a sustainable food supply for them. What we've shown is that we have these inhospitable conditions where you have extremes in environmental changes, which changes the landscape of vegetation, the source of food for these large, warm-blooded dinosaurs, thereby suppressing their ability to sustain themselves in the tropics.
And were there other creatures that did survive in that unstable tropical world?
Yes, there were carnivorous dinosaurs that were present that were able to eat and sustain themselves, and there were also some herbivores that were present that were probably relying on the aquatic prey for sustaining themselves, but no large plant-eating forms in existence.
Okay, so when we picture something that most people are familiar with, like the Brontosaurus, that couldn't have lived in that tropical climate?
No, despite there being a multitude of specimens that are found in the temperate latitude. So there was ecological space for them to survive, but not in the wild climate extremes of the tropics.
While you didn't set out to predict our future climate, what does your study tell us about the long-term results of creating a high-carbon atmosphere?
Well, we show that the climatic effects of increasing CO2, and as we said, that's 4 to 6 times that of modern levels, but similar to what is forecasted for 100 to 200 years in our distant future, reshapes land plant communities. These are the foundation of terrestrial food webs, so they have considerable effects on the ecosystem composition that can survive on land. And when you have sudden climate perturbations with these extremes of drought and intense heat driven by increasing atmospheric CO2 levels, it has the capacity to change vegetation populations. What we showed for plant-eating animals in the Triassic, but also potentially for supporting modern humans.
Your study surprised me a bit because I've talked with some scientists who suggest the climate of the tropics would not change much. They have said most of the heating would occur closer to the poles and the tropics might not heat up all that much. In fact, some predicted a very stable climate due to low ocean circulation. How do we get to this new position?
Well, it is really interesting. I guess what we are showing is that there are extremes in variability here. At some times there would be forests and streams, but on other times there would be very, very dry conditions with these forest fires. And it is true that some of the climate models for this interval of time do seem to predict other scenarios. But in this case, this is what our data seems to show when you connect all the environmental dots, including from the fossils of the organisms themselves, the geochemical remains. So it's something that would be interesting to pursue in the future, would be to look at several different sites around the globe and see what information we can decipher.
In your opinion, Jessica, could humans live in the tropics in the kind of world that you studied?
It's difficult to look at humans in the context of a world where mammals were just developing in the fossil record. But, you know, we're thinking about a world where average temperature was 10 degrees higher. I think it would be really very difficult.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the geological record, the hothouse world took millions of years to develop, I think, and now we're injecting greenhouse gases very quickly. I wonder, is there a lag time, do we know, between, say, a doubling of CO2 and then the kind of changes that happened in the distant past?
It's true that there are leads and lags in the system, and it's one of the major areas of research, is trying to decipher exactly how long it takes to have that response, and then what climate sensitivity is like in the past for other greenhouse worlds, and if that is even the same as today. Because it's typically thought the new estimates have a doubling of CO2 is potentially 1 degree Celsius temperature change, and other greenhouse worlds perhaps it's 3 degrees or 5 degrees. So those are all areas that are under study and what is afforded by these natural experiments that have played out in the past, which allows us to have some sense of, you know, even if they're not perfect analogs to future climate scenarios, at least if we compile enough of them, we can have a sense of what we might be looking at.
As you know, dinosaurs are big in the movies, Jessica, and in the human imagination. What has been the reaction to your new paper?
Well, I think we had some free advertisement with the fortuitous release of Jurassic World coming the week right before our paper. But, you know, I think it's good to advertise these worlds. Dinosaurs are fascinating, but also the world that they live in is really quite important for these partial analogs of future climate change scenarios.
Well, the paper, Extreme Ecosystem Instability, Suppressed Tropical Dinosaur Dominance for 30 Million Years, was accepted for publication in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in May of 2015. From Britain, we've been talking with the lead author, Dr. Jessica H. Whiteside, from the University of Southampton. Jessica, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise.
Thanks so much for your interest, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.